Hello, beloved listeners. This is Adrienne, and I just wanted to share that the episode you're about to hear was recorded before the genocide in Gaza, the escalation that we're sitting in right now. So I think there's still a ton in here that is really useful and can even be applied to this time. It's also not unusual that we record our episodes a little early, but then when they land is when they're most needed, even if we didn't know what was coming. So I hope that this episode feels really useful to you. And if it's not possible for you to bring your attention to it in this moment, it's okay. It'll wait. Love you so much.
When I feel moved to go do something and it's like an easy yes, then great. And if it's too difficult and it feels a little off, it's not worth it. But I used to think I had to do everything and I had to show up everywhere and I would miss out. And it's that understanding that I'm in. There's no missing out because I'm here.
Hello, beloved listeners. This is Adrienne, back with you. I am a writer of stories and songs, an emergent strategist, a pleasure activist, living in the land of the Shikori, Skarure, Tuscarora, Eno, and Lumbee peoples. And this is How to Survive the End of the World, our podcast about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, of course, I'm including my beautiful, brilliant co-host and sister, Autumn, who is currently on sabbatical. And we send you best wishes. I hope every time we send you best wishes, you get a little tingle up your spine that's like, yes, go back to bed. In Autumn's absence, and in honor of my book Fables and Spells, I'm going full witch this season and having conversations with some of my favorite witches and teachers, and I'll also read you bits and pieces from the book as we go. What I mean by witch is people who work with all the elements of the natural world, including human nature, to generate more possibilities. Witching is engaging the essential natural world with the magic, supernatural, and healing intention. Some names for what I'm including in witch work: shamanism, sorcery, seeing and healing, herbalism, midwifery and doula work, root work, conjuring, ritual and spell casting, astrology and divination, sound baths, altar building, song channeling, all acts of building a direct relationship with the realm of the ancestors, the spirit, the holy, the ethereal, and ourselves. And for those of you who are regular listeners, you know that we don't have sponsors, we don't have a big funder behind us, and we don't do ads. And no shade on anyone who does, it's just not how we do it. I like to be able to just make the offer based on the listeners wanting to support it. So we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. And if you like what you hear, become a patron. Today, I get to have a conversation with someone who is familiar to our podcast listeners. We have had her here before. She is the people's astrologer, Chani Nicholas, who now I feel like you're like, I don't even know. It feels like you're both the people's astrologer and like the most world famous, globally Oprah approved astrologer concurrently, who also has an app called the Chani app, where you just every day I'm with Chani listening to you guide me through a meditation, set me up for my week, give me my own personal readings. I go back for more meditations and readings. I get my journal prompts. I set my altars up. Like, basically, you are a daily companion of my life and so many other people's lives when it comes to how we relate to our celestial selves. So, Chani Nicholas, welcome back to Le Podcast.
Thank you so much. Oh my goodness, it's so good to see you. This is how
so good to see you, too.
You hang out with Virgo placements as you do something with them together that yes. Other people would call work.
I'm just living my best life. What are you talking about?
Yeah, this is what we're doing.
It's true. I'm like, this is how I am. I'm actually dating someone who has a Virgo placement and it's like so cute. Like, I'm like, OMG, okay. Like you just also want to get things done.
Go.
Let's get it done.
Yes. Okay.
Anyway.
We'll talk about that later.
Some other story. But Chani, We always start off by just asking our guest, how are you right now today?
Right now today, I'm good. I'm a little hormonal, but also I just had acupuncture.
Oh, so a little Alice in Wonderland.
So yeah, like I'm very relaxed and I'm coming down off of some kind of hormone surge.
Wow.
So I'm like, I'm good, but I'm riding that body wave that, you know, just gets like weird every three and a half, four weeks.
Yes.
So yeah, but I feel so grateful that I got to have acupuncture.
I'm so
grateful.
And
I feel so
happy
to see you.
I have acupuncture in the morning and I just did, it's the end of my moon cycle. And I just did another interview with a witch who was like, oh yeah. And like, you had to do little blood rituals or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's what I need to do. So like between interviews, I was like, let me go get some blood and go, cause I'm trying to buy my house. So I was like, I need to put some blood on it. In the yard like just remind the land to hold on tight to me while I go through this negotiation process.
I'm so excited to hear this.
I'm really excited too. I never thought I was going to be a house purchasing person, really.
Yeah.
I came of age in New York and it was just like that's not gonna be a thing that I'll be able to afford in a lifetime. But now I live in Durham and I found a place I love and slowly other adults were able to be like, here's why people buy houses. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm going for it.
I like that Mercury's direct now.
Yeah. The whole process started right as Mercury stationed retrograde. And I was like,
yeah,
it's okay. Because Chani says, as long as I'm intentional, I can still figure out this. And now, yeah, it's gone direct before anything gets signed. So that feels good. Yeah.
Wonderful. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but I'm so grateful to be here with you. And in this moment in human history, I feel very excited about shedding light on all the things that are happening, which are quite upsetting to those in power, and yet they are true and they're not turning backwards. So I keep looking at it and being like, oh, you're not going to like unqueer us, and you're not going to... like we're going to find our way to take care of each other's reproductive justice needs and we're going to be witches. We're going to
gay witches,
gay witches. So, when I started off doing this, I was just like, this is what I love and I want to dive into it. But each episode feels more and more political to me in a way that I'm like, oh, I forget just how brave it is in the context of all of human history to stand in the light and say, yeah, this is what I'm up to. And I think other people can also find ways to be in relationship to this practice. So that's a lot of what we're going to talk about today is kind of how did you find your way to this? And what do you wish everyone kind of understood? So let's start with, you know, I'm using the language of witch. Mm-hmm. That's not everyone's language for themselves. So first I would want to say, how do you identify the work that you do?
I mean, I definitely usually say astrologer, but I think astrologer and witch have often been interchangeable throughout history. I think they've often been equally misunderstood and misconstrued and thought of as something not so good by whatever powers that be.
Yeah.
So I'm really okay with any label that anybody wants to put on me. I don't really have like a major like connection to anything. I am working in a system that's based in the natural world, which is what I feel, you know, doing, being a witch is that I'm in conversation or trying to translate some conversation that I feel is happening through this ancient system that I've studied for a long time because of the teachers that passed it down. And so that's what I think, you know, witchcraft is, or spell work is. It's to be in conversation with what is appearing all around us. And for most of human history, that was just the natural world and our relationship to it and trying to make sense of it. And also feeling that connection to it. Some of the oldest artwork that we've rediscovered is celestial.
Yeah.
So we've always had this deep conversation with the sky. We know people followed stars. You know, we were nomadic, or when we needed guidance, we could look to the night sky to follow certain stars to give us literal direction. We know equinoxes and solstices told us when we were at those turning points, so we could find and nourish ourselves by finding food and finding ways to water and finding ways to, you know, be able to survive. So we've been marked, our psyche has been marked by our relationship with the sky in some way, shape, or form throughout our history, no matter where we're talking about. So if that's witchcraft, then great. And,
yeah.
I just feel like it's one of the oldest conversations that we have going. And I feel like we're all yearning for those old, old ancient ways of listening and speaking.
I agree. I mean, obviously I agree, but I think there's something, you know, I've been really pushing back because for a while, especially as I was starting to turn towards this work myself, there was such a like, ooh, that's that woo-woo stuff. And for me, I was always like, no, like this is the most tangible thing I am experiencing. And it's so strange to me to live in a world where we're like, look at the ocean's response to the moon.
Yeah.
And then science says that if all of us are little water bodies, salt water bodies, that there would also be an impact on us from the celestial bodies. Like,
yeah.
This, so for me, I'm like, it's so interesting that that has been cast into the realm of like the woo woo, right? Because I'm like, just because you can't feel it, it's still this, there's measurable impacts and there's measurable and visible patterns that you can see and that you're experiencing. And that, like, if you're related to people, you're like, that's so Pisces, you know, or whatever it is, right?
Unmistakably so. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have been loving it. You know, my good friend Janine for a long time was like, I don't know. And then I sent her your book when it came out. And, or actually, I sent her son your book to like slip it into the door.
Yeah.
And then she was like, oh, this all adds up. And I'm just like, yeah, just let it all add up, you know, like let it all add up. So when did you know that you were drawn to this witchy work? And like, we've talked a little bit about it in this podcast before. So I want to ask you if you have a memory of the interiority of it, right? Like kind of before it was something you were practicing, did you have a sense of pull from within?
Yeah. You know, that first moment that I met, she is like a step grandmother, like my second stepmom's mother. So grandmother figure came into my life when I was 9 years old. But the first time I met her, I was a little older, like the first time I met her in person. And I just remember meeting her. I was like 11 years old. And I remember meeting her and the room was lit up. She's a Reiki master. She's the one that introduced me to astrology and to tarot and to meditation. And really, like, she is one of those people that puts her hands on you and it's like fire and lightning in your system. And she just carries that kind of wattage. And my whole body responded to her, and a voice, you know, came into my being and said, follow this woman. She knows how to get out and she knows the way. And that was it. I was just like her devotee. You know, I was like, anytime that she spoke, I was listening. Anything that she would let me go to, I begged her to start studying Reiki with her. And she was like, you're too young. Like you have to wait. And so finally on my 14th birthday, I was allowed to go to a Reiki level one workshop with her. And she did the kind of like hands-on healing where, you know, people get on the table and start having huge experiences, and she uses sound work. And there was a lot of like cathartic stuff happening. There'd be like six people on different tables at a time. Everyone would be working on each other. People were having, you know, all these big, huge experiences. And I was 14 and I was like, I love this.
Yes.
This is how I want to spend my weekends.
More.
And anything that she'd let me be a part of, I would just show up. And she brought me to my first astrology class. And that was another moment of just recognition. Well, she also gave us our first astrology reading before that. I had taken Reiki. So the first reading I got, I just felt the same way. Like, there's that recognition that we have when we meet some part of our destiny, or when we meet some part of our talent, or meet something that's like, you come.
Come on over.
And I just felt that immediate pull to it. And it's never released me.
I love that. And did you feel, you know, I've heard you speak about your queerness in such beautiful ways, in such liberatory ways, in such landing ways. Was this all happening concurrently for you? Were you like young and aware of your queerness and young and turning towards these practices? Or did one of them come before the other?
I think these practices came first, but I also grew up really blessed with queer community.
Okay.
My best friend's mom was like full, you know, lesbian dyke, like on a motorcycle, had her own business.
Dyke.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like full out.
So
like
exciting.
There was no mistaking that they were lesbians.
Yeah.
And they lived really out and in our tiny small town in British Columbia, Canada. I'm sure they faced a lot of homophobia, but they also, there was a full community and I grew up in it.
Okay.
And then when my dad moved to Toronto, my stepmom at that time, all of her friends were gays and her business partner was a lesbian. So I never didn't know it. Like it was always just an option for me. And I don't think it was until I was a little older, but I always thought I'll have a girlfriend when I'm 60. That's what I thought. I was like, when I'm 60,
yeah,
I'm going to have a girlfriend and I'm just going to be free.
Which is
and
probably
then,
the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I was 19, I was like, oh, I don't think I have to wait till I'm 60, actually.
I could go ahead and do this now. Yeah. That's
beautiful. And yeah. And a grandfather figure was gay in my life, too. And he would do the tarot. And so I was just inundated with queer culture again, very luckily from a really young age.
I love that. You know, I think often about, I wonder how different my life would have been if I had seen models earlier.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, cause I think there's a moment of like seeing and then internalizing, oh yeah, like that could be an option for me or whatever. And mine was late, you know, like it wasn't until really college that I was like, oh, that's a thing. That's a path. You can, a lot of things can fit on this path. But I think as I've been doing these interviews, I've been really struck by how many people come into their capacity to practice this magic who also have a tendency towards same-sex relationships or towards relationships that are countercultural, counter to the mainstream in some way. And it's just beginning to like, you know, sometimes stuff begins to spark at the edges of my senses and I'm like, oh, that's intriguing to me. And
because this work is very border.
It's border work. I mean, in some ways I think it's like going to the margin and finding the portals that are there, finding the openings. But I think there's also a shoring up. Like there's a way of being like, there's things that we don't necessarily want to invite in or that we don't necessarily want to draw in. And so I've been thinking myself lately as there's a part of the work is being like, how do I keep calling in the center of the world we want to grow into? And how do I let myself be like a moral compass towards that center, which does have a borderline, but that borderline is really about not letting in self-harming behaviors, like harming the community behaviors. And it's not the people, it's the behaviors. And I think, you know, I just keep thinking about all those things and how the first step of that is learning to be like, oh, here's who I am. And I'm not going to harm myself by denying who I am. And here's the powers I have access to. And it would literally harm me to not access them. And so many of the people I'm meeting in this sort of witch journey, that's the common thread is people being like, I didn't know that I would even be allowed to do this thing. But if I didn't carve out space for it, I don't know that I would have made it, you know?
Yeah. Because it's that, again, that conversation. So it's, there's a part of me that is in dialogue with the skies or the planets or the patterns or whatever you want to call it. And then there's like the rest of me. But if I deny that part, what happens for me is it comes through my dreams or in times when I have denied that that part or the talent or the conversation or whatever you want to call it, it shows up in my dreams in really forceful, kind of terrifying ways sometimes, because when something wants to get your attention, it will go to whatever lengths. And then I think if you don't respond to it or don't pay attention, I don't know what happens after that, but I don't really want to know. I think that life kind of doesn't work that well.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to listen and to say, okay, because I think, as I probably said last time I was here, like I didn't want to be on the margins. I was such a weirdo anyways.
Yes.
And I had grown up in so many counterculture things that I was like, I don't really need any more counterculture, actually. Like, I'm full. Thank you
Yeah,
very much.
I'm good.
And there, I didn't see a path for me to carve out a way to be in this work and also be in the world, because I think it's so important to be engaged in both the dream of what we need to create and the reality of what is now,
Yes.
and to stand and be that bridge in some way, shape, or form, or to build a life that could be the bridge. And I didn't want to escape or evade the very real situation that we're in. And I also couldn't give up this thing that spoke so loudly to me and was trying to work with me and actually help me out. And so it took a long time. I'm a really late bloomer. And as soon as I said yes, all my life started to work out.
Beloved survivors, it's autumn. Wow, I've been loving this witch season. I trust that you have too, because it's just excellent. I'm still on sabbatical for a few more months, but Adrian and I did just drop a new Patreon exclusive episode over at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. And it's a voice memo conversation that we recorded over the course of a few weeks. So if you love me and miss hearing my voice, if you love our show enough to listen to Adrian and I talk about new love, about aging, about roaches and utopias, you can head over to our Patreon and become a patron at any level. And you'll get immediate access to this most recent exclusive episode, as well as our collection of show merch, all of the Ask Us Anything episodes that we've made, and a forthcoming virtual live show that we're planning. All of it is yours. I miss you. Adrian and I thank you for your support. We love you. Yeah, and go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow to check out all the juiciness. Okay, talk soon.
Sonia Renee Taylor and I have done this project around radical permission, and a ton of what we were exploring it for ourselves. You know, we're like, there's something that we have given ourselves in this lifetime, which has allowed for immense joy and an immense sense of purpose and a sense of the world saying yes to who and how we are. And we had all these people come through this course, and the primary thing that was common amongst them was, if you don't say yes, what happens is this stagnancy and this frozenness and this sense of not being able to be honest within your own life. And I'm grateful for the second step grandmother who showed up. I'm grateful for the motorcycle dyke mama friend, you know, because I do think there's these informal lineages that happen for us where we come across the right person at the right time, and they just show us something else is possible, you know? For me, I think the first thing was a flamboyant aunt who just the colors that she wore and the way she spoke and the way she entered a room, I was like, you are not containing yourself for anybody. This is what it looks like if you let yourself use every color in the crayon box, you know, and like say whatever is actually true in that moment. And it's just like these people plant seeds in us. So I'm curious about who else planted seeds in you in those informal ways. And then, you know, what is the moment for you of picking up on like, here's the formal lineages that I'm practicing. And I'm particularly curious, I know some of the astrology lineage and that you have like a serious teacher journey there, but you've added in so much else, meditation, journaling, ritual, all these other kinds of witchy work. And so I'm curious about the lineages of those pieces. Like, did folks teach you how to do all that?
Yeah, I mean, I was a yoga teacher for 7 or so years, and I studied with a lot of different teachers. One teacher that I studied a lot with was Annie Carpenter in LA. And I think every time I've ever taken a yoga class or sat in a guided meditation, I've learned so much from the experience because it's an embodied experience. So you get to know what works and what doesn't work and what you resonate with. And so there's like a million, people that I studied with in those years. I did a yoga therapy course at LMU, and I studied yoga therapy with Sherry Browerman in LA. So I really spent a lot of time working with the body. And then again, Anita, those early years with her, we did so much about how things show up in the body and how they present in the body. Very much the body keeps the score kind of work. And I also had teachers that carried on that work with me, Ulrika Balke and Fran Sacco, and these people in Toronto that like held these incredible containers for me. And also, I sat in meditation groups with Fran Sacco for years, like 10 years in Toronto, and also with a group of women that were all different ages and all different sexualities and all different stages of their life. And I learned so much. I learned so much about pregnancy and pregnancy loss and abortions and, all the things that you don't talk about in, everyday life. It's like when you sit in these circles of diverse groups of folks, you get to that really good stuff. So that was when I was really young. I got that. I went to George Brown University, and I took a course called Assaulted Women's and Children's Counselor Advocate, which is basically Feminism 101. Again, it was like this incredible group of incredible faculty and an incredible group of very diverse women that came together to do this learning. I mean, this is a very long time ago. I'm sure the program's very different. But also, just like, I mean, there it was like everyone started straight and everyone ended very queer. So, like, I had those experiences and they were so opening. And that really solidified my political understanding and my viewpoint. And it took me a long time to figure out how to merge that and marry that with the astrology, like kind of what we started talking about. I didn't know anybody would be interested in it, but then folks like you showed up and I was like, whoa. I'm not the only one here. And that's the thing about leaning into whatever your thing is that you'll find all the other people that are there with you. They just don't know, just like you, that they're there too. Like you're all in a room and nobody knows that they're in a crowd of people until you like say yes and you start to come into form. And then you realize all these other people are there with you and that you're actually working on a collective body of work together. And that it's so exciting because you're having this conversation in your head, and then you realize that it's actually you're having it with all of these other people that came in at the same time as you, and they've been having the same experiences as you, and they've been having the same feelings, and they want the same world as you, and that you're actually part of building this thing that's happening through you, and it's bigger than you, and it's not about how inadequate you feel or whatever. It's just about showing up and learning as you go. So I'm like teacher obsessed in a lot of ways. I always, find new teachers, and I value teachers so deeply, and I just think it's one of the greatest gifts in the world is to study something and then offer what you've gathered from it. And it's such a beautiful relationship to be in relationship with your own wisdom gathering, and then to be in relationship with what other people have received. Lately, I've been studying with a rabbi. I've been studying the Zohar, which is a mystical Jewish text. And I've also been studying with a writing teacher. And both of those things have been incredible. So the rabbi I'm studying with is Peretz Wolf Prusan, and the writing teacher is Margot Steins. And they've been, illuminating and fascinating for me to work with as well. So
I love
I just think
that.
like the more you follow those like inklings of what you might want to do or what your talent might want to do next, or you just keep unfolding into something really beautiful.
I really love this. And I love it too, because there's a way that for many of us who are in this kind of like holding the transitional space between the world we're in and the world we are co-creating. And yeah. it does feel like a parallel world for me in some way, that I'm like, it's so tangible to me the way things could be, the way things have been and could be. Yeah. And it's almost as tangible to me as what we're living in. Sometimes it's more tangible to me than what we're living in. It's more believable than what we're living in. Yeah. And then being like, oh, I remember my friend Adela being like, yeah, you are the one you've been waiting for. Like you're one of the ones you're waiting for. Like we have been given exactly the capacity we need to help move us towards that work. And you start to find each other. But I always tell people, I'm like, there's no linear way to be that. It's a being. And so inside of being that, new teachers are constantly emerging and new lessons are constantly emerging and new work. You know, I am going through the recent loss of a dear friend, and it's opening up in me another level of, you really are going to fuck with this grief shit in this lifetime. Like that is part of your calling. Part of my calling is I have this very clear sense also of a world beyond life, a world beyond this human life that is deeply comforting to me and, but hard to reckon with in relationship to this life and the ways people get pushed out of it. So I have these experiences of when I hear that someone has died, I very rarely feel sadness for that soul, for that being, because I'm like, they're on the greatest adventure of delight and it's all good. But I feel the great sadness for the exit itself, right? That part of the process. So anyway, there's teachers for that.
Blessing. Yeah. Yes.
Right. What were you saying?
Yeah. I just said, may their memory be a blessing.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it literally is, that's a part of what I'm coming to understand too, is like letting that be as literal as it can be. Like since they died, they loved art. And so I have bought all this art that I've been meaning to buy for the longest time. And just being like, it's okay to just get prints and it's okay to frame them myself and it's okay to do it. But like, I know this is something, this is a blessing that this person always walked with in their world. And now just sitting in my house, everywhere I look, I'm like, oh, he's here with me now and I will carry him forward. And people who don't ever know him will come into my space and they'll feel the lineage of that curation and that beauty standard.
I felt that really strongly when my grandmother passed, my mom's mom. I remember standing in the grocery store. It was at Passover and all the kosher foods were out and I just started bawling. And it was the first time I think I'd really cried because there was some kind of numbness around it. And I got in that moment that she was going to live through me.
Yes. That's it.
And that was it.
And that's it. And you get that.
And I thought, oh, yeah. Now I am, she's integrated into me and now that lives through me.
Exactly. And the beauty of that, to me, the beauty of that, of just like, oh, I get to know some of the people who will live through me, but there's so many more who are living through me and I don't even get to know. And I think so many of these witchy tendencies or this calling to the astrological gift that you have, I think so many of those things are ways that the unspoken or unknown is also speaking and calling through us, right? And I'm like, ancestors, many of my ancestors have had gifts when it comes to feeling the invisible, right?
And do you know them?
Some of them I know. Some of them I'm finding out. My parents just moved down south and I'm starting to gather little clues because there's a lot that hasn't been shared or is unknown. Southern secrecy is a whole particular shape.
Yeah.
Although I think maybe familial secrecy is the larger whole shape. Yeah. And then inside of that, Southerners will like smile and tell you the sweetest things to divert you from actually getting to know the thing you're asking about. But I keep hearing about like prophetic dreams that people in my family have had. I keep hearing about the relationship between their acts of prayer, what I call their acts of manifestation, and the realization of those acts. And all of that is just delightful to me. So, yeah. Do you know of like ancestors before?
No, I actually don't know anybody that's in my, you know, blood lineage.
Yeah.
So I've had these like fairy godmothers that have come in,
yeah,
and really shepherded.
Yeah. Me, I mean, and you know, I'm 44 now and I'm just starting to find these clues. I've always thought I was like, yeah, I'm just an original breaking out from the family Christian lineage to do this thing. And I'm like, oh, wait.
Pre-Christianity.
Exactly. There's something before and in me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're most known for your astrological work, and I wonder if you would share a little bit about the ways you do it, right? Because I don't know that people have a sense of, you know, what this looks like. Like, there's a huge part of what you're doing at all times that is writing. Like, I think of you as an excellent writer, someone who's able to write in a very conversational, emotive, accessible way.
Adrian, I don't write anymore for the business.
What do you do? How do you, do you just download it from your brain straight onto what? How does it happen?
Well, everything that you're reading from everything that you're reading, like that's in print, somebody else on our team wrote.
I love that.
Yeah. So I wrote everything for the better part of a decade.
Yes.
And then when we launched the app, I was writing weekly horoscopes for, I think, the first 6 months.
Yeah.
And it just about broke me.
Yep. That seems like too much for anybody.
Because I also do the weekly readings and the podcast, and I've had to learn how to run a tech company as well. So a lot's going on, and I finally gave it up, and it was a really wild, difficult, important thing for me to do.
Wow.
And so what I've been writing now is like really private still, because I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I'm writing
delicious,
much more personal things, and I'm not really writing about astrology anymore, but I talk about it.
You talk about it. So when you do the weekly reading, that's coming from your...
From me.
That's just you. That's just you.
I just get in the booth and I look at the astrology and I just start rambling on.
There's no rambling. It's wonderful. But this is what I'm talking about. So this is the funny thing, because I feel like I do a lot of my writing out loud now, right? Like I'll be giving a talk or I'll be in a conversation. I'm like, that sentence was writing. That was a writing, darling. Yeah. And I'm like, gather it, put it down somewhere, because now I trust the way the words are going to move through me. And I feel like that's what I see in you, is that it's not just that you're like, I understand what I'm looking at when I look at the sky, when I look at the celestial beings, when I look at what transits are happening. It's like, I also trust that I can communicate this very clearly to people, right? Because now you just get on Instagram and you're just like, y'all babies, blah, 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 blah.
Well, you know, when you do something that much, it just gets in your system. My therapist is also a cowgirl, so she talks about like time in the saddle, but it's true. It's like you get like time in the thing, and you it gets in you, and it carves pathways in you, and you get to trust it, which is hard when you're young and you don't have that kind of timed relationship with something, and you feel weird and you feel awkward, and that's such an important part of your relationship building, is because you're learning like how to do it and how much energy it takes and how much time it takes and how to actually kind of become the thing that it needs, you know, and it will mold you. Like the practice is, if the technology of the practice is sound, it'll just do its thing to you and it'll shape you in the way that it needs.
Yes.
And you'll be like, okay, move through me, do the thing.
Yeah.
I used to feel like before, I don't feel it as much anymore, but sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, that part of me, I don't know who's going to do this work, but that part of me is going to show up and do it. And
yes, I know what
sometimes when I'm really tired or I'm just like, I don't even know how this is going to happen, but I know that part of me is going to, you know, come on in and run the show and I'll be okay. Like, and so now I can have a lot of fun with it. Like if there's something kind of high stakes or, you know, when you have those moments, you're like, oh, wow, this is going to make me nervous.
Yeah.
Then you can be like, no, that part of me knows. And this part of me can be nervous. And that part of me can be like, I got this.
I actually have this. Don't you worry about it, girl.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's just the practice of it, and the showing up and showing up and showing up and being sweaty and afraid and tummy aches and all the things,
Yeah.
and you just keep going. And just because it's difficult doesn't mean it's not worth it. And only you can know what that kind of connection is. But it's so important to be uncomfortable through parts of you becoming
Yeah. Who you are, yeah.
yourself.
Do you have
Yeah.
rituals around how you do it? Like, is it like, I light a candle every time I sit down, and is it just sort of
No.
like I
I'm like, okay, I've got 2 hours. Let's go. I can like bust out. I
exactly.
know how much I can
I got
do. And
seven
I know,
signs, whatever.
yes. I'm like, okay, let's go. And, teaching yoga actually taught me that really well because I knew it was like, again, it got ingrained in me. I know how many minutes this pose takes. And I know what 45 minutes feels like in my body.
Yes,
I know what 5 minutes feels
that's
like.
right.
And so when I do the meditations, like, I know it's just in there.
Yeah.
It's kind of a circuitry.
Yeah. You love a 12 to
And
13 minute offer. Like the universe shaped you to make those
yeah,
particularly. I
exactly.
think it's so interesting. Like I'm like, I look at people who I'm like, the TikToks of TikTokers or whatever who are like offering their wisdom in 1 minute bites. And I'm like, wow, that's so fascinating because that's not how I was shaped. But I was shaped to a certain length of poem and a certain length of essay and a certain length, So you do, you sit down, you do the astrology, you've done the meditation stuff. Do you come up with the journal prompts and all that stuff now, or now you're like
That's
trusting
the
the
writing
team?
team.
So how did
Yeah,
you
the
learn to
writing team.
trust all these other people to write on something that has your name on it?
My director of content, Eliza Robertson, is, I could cry. Like, to have somebody that you meet that you trust because her integrity, her wisdom, her ability to write and her integrity is, it matches, like she's a whatever, the her integrity and mine and her work ethic and her desire and her dedication to the craft is so high. And she's such a rare find. Like, this job was made for her and she said yes to
That's
it,
such
and
a
I
blessing.
could cry every day in relief.
I know the feeling of that. I know the feeling of that. I mean, I think there's intentionality in spell casting in all of these little things, right? That I'm like, I really learned to be like, oh, you have to actually say, I'm going to carve out a position. I'm going to create a space to be supported the way I need to be partnered the way I need to. Then it can happen, because
Fully.
that person
And
exists, if I can
yeah. And then
imagine
she
them.
built a writing team. She has all these beautiful writers, and then she got an, she's got an editing team, and the
Gorgeous.
editors are just so on it. And Thea Anderson is our director of content, and she does everything. She checks out. She's also a phenomenal astrologer, a phenomenal
Great.
writer. Just our team is so absolutely, they're a dream. Like, every single person on our team is a dream. And we worked really hard to find them. And, we were really intentional about hiring.
And really intentional
And
about what you give people. I feel like whenever I see a job description come up, I'm like, could I do this job because the package is so good? Do I have any astrology
we're really
skills?
interested in shifting work culture
Yes, that
and what
shows.
it means to be a part of a company. I deeply, deeply feel responsible to the people that work for us and responsible to the people that have the app. And I don't want a company that isn't inside, outside, outside, inside, that what we're doing outside isn't also happening inside. And we've got a lot to learn and stuff comes up and, people are people and nothing's perfect, and we every day strive to be as thoughtful as possible and learn so much. Oh my God, I'm like a radically different human than I was when we started the app,
Yeah, that makes a lot of
because
sense to me.
nothing's grown me like having to lead,
This huge
a
body of
phenomenal group
people.
of humans.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is the, I think about all the kinds of unseen work there are in the world. And I think this kind of work of actually being like, how do we construct spaces that embody the values that we espouse in the world is such a huge piece. And I'm working right now with folks who are like, eat, sleep, breathe, think, strategize, build from that emergent strategy perspective. And they're helping me look at my whole garden of like ideas and everything and be like, okay, how do we cultivate this whole space? And it's really, yeah, it's really remarkable to just be like, oh, like the value is at the root, the value is in the dirt.
Yeah.
And
that's it.
I've been blessed, you know, I've been so blessed with the people I've gotten to work with in my life. Like, and I think that watching how you have gone through building this company has been, I hope it resonates back to you that so many people are benefiting from watching the how you're doing that part, as well as what's coming through the actual work.
I have to say it's all, you know, it's all based on Free From, which is
your boo,
my wife. Yeah, Sonia Passey's organization that she founded and is the CEO of that and both this company. And it's the collective work of Free From that came up with the incredible workplace benefits and structures that we have, what we have. So it is from a, you know, nonprofit. It's from an organizing perspective of thinking about what does it mean to have a collective of people that are working towards a goal that feel supported and taken care of. Because as we know, in the nonprofit industrial complex, most people don't make a living. They don't make a living wage. Yeah. They don't make enough to take care of themselves. And they're supposed to do radically transformative work that's supposed to build a new world, but they're struggling to pay rent or like their doctor's bills, or they don't know how their kids are going to .. Like, it is wild that we don't think about centering the needs of people that are doing the work that is so essential to keeping a lot of humans alive and, you know, together. That bridge building work has to be so thoughtfully done.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people that are doing it aren't going to be okay. And then how's the work going to be okay? Or what's the point? It's just so nonsensical to me. So,
Well, I mean, that's the practical piece of it, right? Yeah. That I'm like, actually, the way to the new world is one very practical decision after another, right? Is really looking at it and being like, there's the way we do childcare now, and then there's the way we want to do childcare in that future.
Yeah.
What do we need to do to build that bridge? There's the way that we do living wage now or don't. And then there's the way that we want to do it. And so often it's like, how do we slow down to build up and build out? Where do we need to slow down to get it right to build out?
Slow down. Jupiter just entered Taurus.
Yeah. I know, girl. I was like, slow it down. Enjoy the world all around you. I'm like, okay, Jupiter.
I would love to do the readings and then have Adrian Marie Brown.
I got you. Have your team call me. I'm like, I'm ready for that gig. I just write all these little weird hooks all the time because I just am like these. But yeah, these celestial bodies teach us so much about this. It's like you're never just moving forward. There's always something that's also moving back, or at least appears to be moving backward. And if you accept that dance, you can find the balance in it. So, you know, I feel like you are very suggestively directive with people. Like, you're like, you can
do this,
build the altar the way I told you to, listen to the meditation, fill out the journal prompts. You could do it this way. You don't have to do it this way, but I'm providing you with the tools. And, you know, I have my Chani book and I have my Chani deck of cards. And, you know, you're like, here's all the things I know that can help you. Are there other things that you think of as skills that you're drawing on or practices that you're drawing on that you wish everyone had access to in this apocalyptic time?
I mean, I think skills are also the most important thing to develop.
So. Yeah, me too. I know. I keep being like, have tangible skills, people. Have tangible things you can do. You know.
Because there's so many things that come up in a day.
Yeah.
And if I don't go into my little toolkit and get a skill and like, I think I need to go breathe, or I think I need to tell somebody I'm angry. Yeah. Like, I don't want to start a fire, but this thing happened.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a skill for me to go into the living room and say to my wife, hey, do you have a second to talk? I want to talk something through. Mm-hmm. This just happened. And then if I can do that, if I can take a break you know, those skills. And that's something that I wish we all had access to do that.
Yeah.
But what is required is that we have safety.
Yes.
And that we have the moment to pause, and that we have enough to eat that day, and that we've been able to sleep. And, like, you know, so I wish we had all those things in place, that we were well resourced enough to be able to implement these, like, you know, we could call them mindfulness skills or whatever. But those are the things that I'm always working on, because I do have that ability to say, like, okay, I'm safe right now. Mm-hmm. So how can I best come to this situation so that I can help to de-escalate if that's the thing that needs to happen?
Yeah. It feels like that's a certain sense of self-possession and, like, mm-hmm. you know, like really understanding yourself at mm-hmm. any given moment of, like, here's what I need mm-hmm. and here's how I can express mm-hmm. that need. And it's possible that it's met, which I think is always the part of expressing a need that we don't talk about. That I'm like, you know, people are out here like, why can't I find a man? I'm like, you have to express a need that you believe can be met and express it to people you believe can help you meet it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's a huge skill set I feel like I've been developing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love this. And, you know, I tell people about your app all the time too. I'm like, it's really full of practical, you know, really just like, you are stressed, you can go here and there's a million offerings on just breathing, centering, you know, finding mm-hmm. yourself, you know, and it's practical.
I felt like that was really important to mm-hmm. add, mostly because it's my practice and it's also what I studied, but like, the astrology is one thing and it can be very heady. Sometimes it can get people up in their head and can get people. Also, no matter how I say something, something I say can freak somebody out.
Oh, yeah. You're like, don't freak out. But it is a little Scorpio Mars. It is a little Mars right now. Yeah. No, I love it. I love it because you all
so
are always
if
like,
I do,
calm down. Calm down.
If I do inadvertently freak you out, there's also a little. Like,
I will inadvertently calm you down.
Yeah, exactly.
I really love that. So, there's a question that I've been sitting with because I hear you, especially the pace at which you're making your offer, that you're like, I'm doing these weekly readings and the specifics and all that stuff, that I imagine there are times in there when you are tired or burnt out, or you're like coming up against your own healing edge, or, you know, that just that wounded healer part is in effect. And I wonder if you have specific protocol or practices that help you to clear the channel enough to like make your offer, or like, how do you know that you're like, I can still do what I need to do here?
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, I don't feel that kind of burnout anymore.
Great.
But I think I functioned that way for a really long time and got really sick and felt really awful and didn't keep up with my friends and didn't, you know, there was a lot of that. And I had to learn how to state my needs in my relationship. Mm-hmm. I had to learn and advocate for myself to have the kinds of social time I need. And, you know, like, I had to bring pleasure back into my life in a very concrete way, and I had to choose it.
Yeah.
And that took a lot of unwinding, and I needed a team. So now that I've got the team, I don't have to burn out anymore. So if I'm feeling burnt out, then that's really probably, you know, like, unless something not great is happening, a choice, and I need to be like, why are you choosing that?
Yeah.
Go sit down and
you can make a different choice.
Yeah. You could just not do this. And I, at this age, you know, at the end of my 40s, I'm not interested in it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, this period right now, this cycle of grief is one of the first times where I've just been like, I'm not pushing through it. I'm slowing, you know, as soon as it happened, I was like, cancel everything. This is what I'm doing right now. And no regret to it. And actually, it's been so helpful to just be like, oh, this thing is like, so much is able to move, and I can really feel so much wisdom and so much. I mean, I'm just crying so much. Like, it's just like, it's all allowed to happen in what feels like the appropriate timeline. And then I'm, you know, the only thing that I'm still doing is these witchy conversations, because I'm like, witches understand the portal between life and death, you know, in some ways, most of us are like navigating our relationship with it, you know, trying to help those around us navigate the relationship that we have to being mortal beings in an ever-changing world, right?
Yeah.
But there's something so, like, it feels like it took a lifetime to learn how to be like, oh, this is the most important thing. And the channel will clear if I take the time and let the water run through.
Yeah. And this is where the transformation happens anywhere else. And I'm not missing out on anything.
Exactly.
You know, like I'm here. Exactly. This is where my life is. Yeah. And when I feel moved to go do something and it's like an easy yes, then great. And if it's too difficult and it feels a little off, it's not worth it. But I used to think I had to do everything and I had to show up everywhere and I would miss out. And it's that understanding that I'm in. There's no missing out because I'm here.
Yeah.
And I think, like, with that grief work, that is the witch work. Like, that is being with what is in a really deep way and knowing that it's not all about being happy or being above life or being winning at everything. And it's not always about, you know, this hyper, like, stimulated kind of time. We have to be able to sit with our fear around what we will find when we allow ourselves to grieve and who we are. And, you know, like who we are is, we have to be able to grieve. Otherwise we will never love.
Yes.
And we grieve because we've loved.
Yes.
And so they are one in the same. Yes. And it's a beautiful way to honor somebody's life is to allow their exit to impact you fully.
Fully. Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking that, you know, I'm just like, you know, you grieve the person, you grieve all the plans you had with that person. You grieve all the unplanned things you just know were going to happen with them, you know? And, but it's really like, and grief to me is one of the ways I am the most clear about how alive I am, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I am here. I am not completed yet. I am here carrying forth all these ghosts, all these ancestors, all these beloved ones. Like, it's my job to, you know, it's like they've left me with something to keep going, to keep carrying forward. And when I die, that will disperse to others. And there's just something so beautiful about knowing that, feeling that to me.
I think somebody's my first like love died when I was 19 and I had moved out and we had lived together when I was 16 and it was like a whole thing. And I felt like he was really the first person that saw me, that loved me, that claimed me, that said, you know, like he was like, I love you, you know, and that was such a new experience for me. And when he died, I remember standing on the subway platform in Toronto. And I had just read a metaphysical book about life after death and this connection between these two women. One had died, one was still here, and they were talking to each other. And it was this whole thing. And I thought, look, either you believe this or not.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. Either you believe that death is just a continuation of a soul's journey and that all this shit you've been studying, this Reiki, this astrology, either this is real or it isn't.
Yeah.
And it was like that instant, I was like, okay, I'm all in.
Yes. Yes. It's that I keep trying to tell people, I'm like, there's this way that each time I lose someone, my faith gets like solidified in a deeper way in all the things that I'm practicing and feeling, you know, because I'm like, oh, well, I can feel them and I know some things. And in the same way that I feel the zeitgeist of aliveness, I feel this other presence and I trust my tarot to help me communicate. And I trust my stones. I trust, I trust all my divination tools, which is really fortifying. I'm like, I'm glad I have all these things because I'm not flailing about like, what? You know, I'm like, why is not our thing that we get to have? I have that curiosity, but there's so much that's beyond my comprehension, and that's the good thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. I love you. And
I love you too.
I have a
We've been talking for 2 minutes.
I know. I'm just like, it just flew by. I have a spell to read, but I can read it. I don't know what your timeline is because we're at time now. I can read it after. Yeah. I can let you go.
Go ahead, read. I'd love to hear it.
Oh, you want
to
hear it? Okay. So it's called Oh Great Mystery, and it's from, it's the first spell in the section that is Fables and Spells for Celestial Bodies. And I was like, oh, this is for Chani. So it's like mid-length. Okay. Oh Great Mystery, we need your help right now, for we are in an impossible situation which we must survive. Our nation is caught up in conspiracy theories, demons, and superiority weaken the mind, and we have so many people who would rather dominate than do their share of societal labor. How do we break the tie of slavery? Oh, universe, we need your help to help clear the vision of those who cannot see the dazzling nature of existence in each being. We have those who have turned from the earth, our only home, our only viable home. They treat her and all who can produce life as machines, to make without ceasing what they then take without hesitation, gratitude, or gentleness. How do we break the tie of slavery? Oh, universe, we need your help. Help us honor the places where abundant life blooms. Protect the consent and agency and song of earth. There are so many who have felt the explosive power of death in their hands, in their bodies, in their imaginations. They roam amongst us, armed, crash into humans, praying with their bodies to be deemed worthy of protection from our most abusive relationship, our nation. How do we break the tie of slavery? How do we quell the addiction to blood and completion, to power that breaks bones and opens flesh? Help us relinquish the pleasure of violence. Mm. There's more, but that snippet feels like whenever I read your work, especially as the world goes through these mass moments of violence and mass moments of crisis, I'm reminded that there are so many bodies that await my invitation, my supplication, my surrender. So thank you, Chani Nicholas. Thank you so much for your beautiful work in this world and your beautiful ways of being in this world.
I love reading your invocations. I get so much life from them, and they just flow through you so effortlessly. And I don't know, I feel like they are so needed. I'm so glad the book is out in the
Thank
world.
You, sister. I love you. I love you. That's all there is to say. Shake these bones, oh God. We had a blast. We hope you did too. We are so grateful for your miraculous life tuning into this. We are produced by the celestial Zach Rosen. We are available if you want to support this work and it's moving you and doing things for you. You can give to us at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. We're on Instagram. That's our only social media right now because it's just too much. We're at End of the World PC. Music for today's show comes from Tunde Alanaran and the Bingsons. Bless y'all. Cast a spell. Tackle my